tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players as we explore tone and the gear that gets it. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast. This is Jeff, and I'm here with Scott, and we have a very interesting show tonight for you. Scott, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Jeff. So here you're going to be working on a new backtrack for the Those American Girls.
Yes, they gave me a call. Debbie and Alicia, the American Girls, sent me a track that they're doing. Debbie's writing an operetta, a rock operetta, as I understand it. So I don't know how the song fits in the story yet. They haven't given me the whole story of it. But they sent me some tracks, and I just posted up the guitar I pulled out and restrung for this session. It's a guitar made by – it's a Quest guitar. It wasn't a very expensive guitar. But what was interesting about it was the neck and the body were mahogany. And it was an it's a nice playing neck. So – what the hell? I won it. It was in a contest, so it wasn't expensive, so I thought I would play around with it. So I popped in some active EMG pickups on there and a Kaler Floyd Rhodes tremolo system, locking tremolo, which is interesting because it's the one that you don't have to cut the ball ends off. And I took a picture. You can see how they're installed. I posted it on Facebook. It's an interesting sounding guitar, and with the active pickups, there's no buzzing, no hum.
Yeah, and you can take a look at those pictures by going to our Facebook site, The Flow Guitar Enthusiast, and they also get, I guess, simulcast or whatever on our Twitter page, which is just Flow_guitar, correct?
Yes, at Flow_guitar. And then also, too, I posted some pictures before the session for our guest that's coming up. We have the Atlas Stan. I posted some pictures of our little mini Marshall we have in the studio, and you can take a look at those. Those are on the Facebook page. We'll post them on the website later.
And we just want to remind our listeners that at any point you can call 323-203-0815 to ask questions to our guests. So we have two guests tonight. And you can also join us on our live chat, which you can go to our flowguitarenthusiast.com and click the live chat link and join in there and ask any questions or comments at any point during the show, and we will certainly try to get them in. Also wanted to point up, last week I had mentioned that I was putting out a demo on the new Les Paul tribute, which I call the Lester guitar. That is now posted up on YouTube, so go check it out. It's pretty neat. It's a 1952 replica with the tailpiece done the way Les Paul wanted it instead of the way Gibson did it. It's a beautiful guitar, has Les's laser-etched emblem in it, his signature in it. And it's not weight relieved, has P90s in it. It just sounds amazing. You can search for it by just searching my name on YouTube, or you can go to my YouTube channel, Selenium. So let's get started and speak with our first guest, who we have via Skype, Mr. Josh Childers.
Hey, Josh, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Doing great. Good to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me on.
So for those of you that aren't aware of Josh and his company, he produces some spectacular hardwood amp stands. The company's called Atlas Stands, and I believe they started out making amp stands and then just has ventured into just about anything you can imagine, and we'll let him talk about that. So Josh, could you tell us kind of your beginning story of kind of how you got into the Atlas Stand world?
Oh, well, it was just you know, a scratch-your-own-itch sort of thing. I bought myself a nice amplifier after owning several over the years. I finally found one that I really liked, considered it to be a keeper, and wanted something nice to put it on that I could not only gig with, but that I could bring in the house and not have it look like an eyesore. Like an ironing board or a piece of gym equipment. I wanted it to be, you know, more a studio piece as well, something that crosses over, something lightweight. And I built myself one, and I realized that I could keep expanding on it, and it just slowly turned into a business.
So, from based off your bio, you had studied quite a bit and became what you, have called yourself an audiophile. Can you talk about kind of, what you learned at, was it Middle Tennessee State University? And tell us what you learned there and how you applied that to your amp stands to improve the sound of your amp and guitar tone.
Well, I guess the learned a lot of stuff that actually doesn't go into the amp stands. You have to learn a lot of law and business classes. But as far as on the audio side, there's a class called Physics of Sound that was very useful. It talked about the different kinds of waveforms that there are and how they correspond with each other, how they cancel each other out, constructive and destructive phasing that happens inside a room. We had to study the characteristics of the studio and how you manipulate sound, how sound reflects, how it will transfer, how it moves through space. I mean, really, all it is air pressure waves. It's a transverse wave going through a wire turned through a transducer into a longitudinal wave, and as these waves are bouncing around the room, how they affect each other, filtering, comb filtering. You can actually have a lot of sound in a room and be standing in spots where you can't hear anything. It's really weird the way it works out. But and then, we dabbled in electronics and worked with the soundboards more than anything. I'd need, I'd be happy to answer more questions. I just need a little more specifics, I guess.
I have a question for you. You did a lot of research. It says on your bio that you did a lot of stuff in hi-fi audio. And I just wanted to know if there was a difference or did you use a similar approach? I know that people use stands for their speakers to isolate them, mm-hmm. Their hi-fi speakers. Is that the same principle for guitar amps and, maybe bass amps? Or was there something else? Is it different for a guitar amp?
Well, I think it's the same for most sound systems. A guitar amp, falling right in with the home theater, listening rooms, studios, mixing rooms, and as well as on stage. What you have primarily is you're working with your primary sound and your secondary sound, or the first wave that hits your ear is going to give you your initial sound, and then anything that is later than 20 milliseconds, there's a debate whether it's 20 milliseconds or 30 milliseconds later, any reflection that hits your ear after that is a distinct echo. And what happens is you get your initial sound hitting your eardrum, and then everything else that hits that after that initial sound is some sort of combination of waves. It's not the actual sound. So anytime you point a speaker directly at your ears, you're going to get more definition and more clarity just inherently.
Right, but does your stand isolate the – I know, like, for example, you hear it more with a bass amp. When you put a bass amp in a floor, you're getting some resonance from the room, from the floor and the walls. When you put the amp on your stand, does that isolate that? So, because that was one of the problems with hi-fi speakers. If you just lay them on the floor or put them on a table or something, there's some resonances that are caused by the furniture and the walls.
Oh, I understand. So, yes, we try to build our stands to have as little contact with the floor and as little contact with the amplifier as possible, so that you don't get coupling. Some people actually enjoy the sound of a amplifier that's coupled to the floor They like the bigger bass sound. What we found is, and this is why we call it the low rider, is you can still decouple the amplifier from the floor, but retain some of the bass response, the proximity effect, with the speaker, retain some of that low end by just keeping it close to the floor, but not on the floor. The bottom of the amplifiers stands have pointed feet, four pointed feet, except for the one that you have, which is a micro. We've got three designs. Two of them have pointed feet, and they act like isolation cones in the hi-fi world or in the home theater world where you play your movies through tube amps. And it reduces any sort of sound transfer through the floor and in through the speaker cabinet and into the tubes is what you're really concerned about. You don't want the vibrations getting to the tubes and causing microphonics. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the more you can isolate the tubes from the speaker and then the speaker from the floor and all three of them from each other, the higher fidelity and sound you'll have.
Now, Scott and I were talking before the show about this. We both had the same question. We were comparing our notes. Is there a difference in the woods that you use? Do some woods act better to isolate the guitar amp, or are some of the woods more resonant, or what have you found from dudes? Because you use a variety of woods, some very beautiful stuff.
Yes, sir. We use all hardwood species that we can get our hands on, and there is a difference in the way they sound. The best way that I can explain it to you is after I get one assembled and all the glue joints are dry. Sometimes I sand parts of them with an orbital sander. It oscillates, and you can actually hear the stands resonate while they're being sanded. Some of them are really loud, almost as loud as the sander itself. And then some of them are really, really quiet. What I found is that the denser woods like maple and cherry that have not a lot of air vessels in them aren't quite as resonant as things like walnut and mahogany. And I personally think that the walnut and the mahogany and the softer, lighter woods that are more resonant actually also damp the sound a little bit when there's pressure on them. But the biggest difference that I find is not so much in the wood type so much as the thickness of the panels. If I want a stand to really sing, I will make the panels as thin as possible. Sort of like the soundboards on an acoustic guitar, mm-hmm. so to speak. And if I really want to keep them quiet, then I make the legs as thick as possible.
So in that case, would you, if you were building a stand and you knew it was going to be used for a live situation, is that the situation where you'd want the stand to sing, and then if you're using it for a studio, you would not? Or am I thinking it opposite?
It's not so much live in studio so much as it is whether or not you're playing just with, you're playing your guitar and you're alone, or there's nobody else playing music with you. If you've got a drummer beside you and a bass player and you're jamming out, you know, either live or not live, the resonance isn't really going to break through the room of the sound. It's not going to make that big of a difference. But if you're playing, you know, in your bedroom or in your living room, or the rest of the band members aren't playing and you're doing a solo, I believe it does make a difference, the wood used, and I would suggest something of a medium thickness, something that's not too resonant and something that's not too dead, but just gives it a little bit of flavor. And it's almost like the debate that has been ongoing for years about solid state and tube and how you can hear the difference and feel the difference. That's what I would liken it to. It's not something that cuts through and actually is intrusive into the music. It's very subtle. I'm actually working on getting calculations, graphs, and going to be testing these stands out like we do a microphone, giving it a frequency response chart, or any speaker, the frequency response, by testing the room sound through an amplifier. So that's my next venture. As far as I want to be able to visually calculate the difference that one of these things makes.
Well, we'll definitely be looking forward to that, and if you know when you have that, maybe we can have you back on to demonstrate that for us. Now, obviously, you know besides your incredible knowledge in regards to audio, how did you get into the wood making, and you know, how did that come about? And I mean, you make such beautiful stuff. I mean, is it just something you've learned over time, or can you tell us about that?
Well, I appreciate that. Well, I've always enjoyed anything that showcases nature. I like the outdoors. I like things that turn nature in. It, you know, like sculpting it just comes natural to me. I dabbled in it when I was in high school, and then out of high school, I broke my teeth on building houses. Rough construction, lots of driving nails and brute force. It wasn't really pretty work, but I was still working with wood. And then when I needed an amp stand, I couldn't find one that I wanted, nothing that I liked, and I decided to build my own. And I grabbed the wood around me, and it just slowly evolved naturally. I mean, but I've always loved woodworking. I didn't apprentice with anybody, although, you know, sometimes I wish I had, but everything that we do here, we're cutting our teeth regularly. You know, we take a lot of what pushes us, a lot of what we like about it is that it's a challenge. It's a design challenge is what it is, more than anything.
So speaking of design challenge, so one of the things you can see when you go to your website, which is www.atlas-stands.com, I believe.
Yes.
So if you take a look at their website, and as you look at different products that you have an enormous list of customization. Everything from, you know, adding a guitar stand to it, to adding lights, to adding plexiglass, to adding, you know, a tabletop, to just whatever you can dream of. Can you talk about some of those different custom add-ons that you can do, and then maybe, you know, tell us about maybe one of the most crazy, you know, requests that you'd had and how you accomplished it?
Sure. The newest one that I'm working on right now is for Infinitum Nil. I'm building a pair of lowrider amp stands that have drawers that pull out of them. They're storage drawers. In place of a storage drawer, we've also got a design where you have a flip-out guitar stand. You kick it out with your toes, so you don't have to bend over to close it or open it. You just work it with the toe of your shoe, opening and closing, and you can set your guitar down in front of your amp stand, and then while you're playing a show, you can kick it out of the way. It just disappears. We've also attached microphones to the front of one of the designs with an adjustable boom that adds a little bit of floor space, keeps the footprint of your whole rig down. Some of them have adjustable backrests so that they fit all sorts of different styles of amplifiers and sizes. We put cooling fans in some of them for some of the vintage amplifiers that run hot. We put a 120-volt cooling fan on its own circuit in the backrest. Let's see, we've branched out into some custom pedal boards, powered pedal boards. We do standalone guitar stands, matching guitar stands. We've put spider web graphics on some of them. We've done a sunburst before. We do lots of curly maple. That's a popular one this year. Let's see. We've done aniline dyes. Just about. We try to mimic solid guitars. Well, the look of the guitar industry, electric guitar industry. We don't do any solid paints like you find on a lot of Fenders. We try to keep from murdering out the wood grain and letting it shine through.
So I have a question for you. Since you kind of come from both worlds, there's always the debate of, you know, having a poly finish and a nitrose finish. Out of curiosity, what does your stance use, and do you think it matters on a guitar or on your stands?
I try to avoid any high gloss finishes because these are tools. They are nice, but they, it's like a truck. You know, if you're gonna buy a truck, you're gonna be willing to scratch it up, and there's a lot of nice trucks out there. I try to stick with the hand-rubbed oil rub, like a Danish oil or a tongue oil, because these things are so modifiable that I'll find myself carving on them and gluing pieces on and cutting pieces out. Really, with wood, you can really make any three-dimensional object very strong. So just for the sake of keeping it organic, keeping it capable of being easily modified, I like to use the Danish oil because it's easy to sand off so that you can get a good glue joint, and then easy to blend back in. Whereas with poly or any sort of lacquer or nitro, it would be hard to blend that in. You'd have to sand it down and then start over and spray it. So I like to keep them more utilitarian, as possible, but still looking good. You know, they're going to get beat up. They're supposed to get beat up. So, you know.
So we also want to remind our listeners again that you can call 323-203-0815. That's 323-203-0815. You can ask Josh a question of your own, or you can join us on our chat room on flowguitarenthusiast.com. So let's go through. So besides amp stands, you make three different types of amp stands. You have a low rider, a studio, and a micro. Can you kind of go through the three of those and talk about their features, and then let's go through your, what I think is pretty neat, the chassis stand and your guitar stands.
Yeah, I forgot about the chassis stand. All right. Well, I'll start with the amp stands. The low rider averages about a 4-inch lift. 15 degrees is standard, but we can go 10 to about 18, 20 degrees with it if we need to. It has a fold out or a flip up. I don't know exactly how to say it in words. Backrest. That can have an adjust. It can be upgraded to be adjustable vertically.
So similar to your studio, where you can actually have it for multiple different types of amps.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
The difference between this one and the studio is the studio has a steeper angle and it's got a higher lift off of the ground. So the studio is not going to have the. It's not going to retain proximity effect. It's not going to retain the bass that you get when it's closer, when your speaker's closer to the ground. But you can make up for that if you just slide your amplifier and your amp stand a little closer to a wall. Even more so, you can increase your output and your bass response if you slide it into a corner. So there's lots of things that you can do with your sound just by moving your amplifier around the room. So the angles are different on them, and the lift is different on them. The studio was the original design. I came up with that for myself originally, and then my best friend, who also builds these with me, John Schramlin, came up with the low rider. He's a bass player, He named it the Lowrider, thinking that it would be for bass players, but it turns out that it was a great name because it also retains the low end of your tone. And then the Micro is the best of both worlds. It's a studio and a lowrider somewhat combined, with a angle that's a little bit in between the two. It was designed primarily for really small amplifiers like Swartz and some of the Epiphones, some of the really small 5-watters. And it's turned out to be something that's growing in size. More people are wanting it for their larger amplifiers because it uses about 2/3 of the materials, so the weight is drastically reduced on it. We've gotten them down to 4.5 pounds now, so they're amazingly lightweight. Then we have our chassis stand, which is it's a chassis cradle for amplifier and builders and amp techs. One of the problems that a lot of people face when they're building amplifiers is a way to keep the tubes and the transformers and all the guts elevated off of your workbench so that you can do your soldering and your wiring and protect the tubes and keep everything just easy to get to. So we've started building chassis stands for Amptechs.
Hey, Josh.
It's been a big hit.
Do you mind if I stop you real quick? We have a caller. If you mind to take the caller.
Yes. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast. Can we have your name and where you're calling from?
This is Gary. I'm from Illinois, and I have a question for your guest there on the finishes. And has he ever tried a water-based type of finish? Does that work successfully? Is the non-water-based area of the finish?
Hi, Gary. Yes, sir. We use aniline dyes on a regular basis, and we actually prefer them. The oil-based stains, they're nice. They take a little bit of the life out of the wood, I think. They mask a lot of the colorations in the wood. But, yes, we do use water-based, and we like it a lot.
And I'm a steel player, so I was wondering, is there any thing that you've found real successful angle-wise or whatever that works with, say, 15-inch speakers, a couple of those behind you?
Well, it depends on the size of the stage or the listening room that you're thinking about. If you're talking, you know, large PA speakers in a large venue, I would stick with something about 15 degrees. If you play small stages, I prefer something along the lines of a 28 to a 32 degree angle, and that way I can get it right up on top of my amplifier and be in the sweet spot up close.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks.
All right, well, thanks for the call. So again, let's remind everyone, I'm sorry to cut you off, Josh, but we need to move on to our next guest, but to remind everyone, besides the chassis stand and all the great amp stands, he also makes some beautiful guitar stands. You can take a look at his work and contact him by going to www.atlas-stands.com. You can also go to our Facebook site to see some of the examples of his work, and we'll certainly get you his contact information there. Is there any other contact information you want to provide out there, Josh?
No, not really. We got a website, Facebook, Twitter. We're easy to find. Type in Atlas Stands and we'll be there.
Also, you can contact Josh directly at josh@atlas-stands.com. That's his email.
Thank you, sir.
All right, so we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with Lonnie Spector, the producer of LA Amp Show, Pedal Expo, and quite a few other wonderful things.
Hang on.
You are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
This is The Flow, and you're listening to The Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show on LATalkRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast. So that was a song by our next guest, Lonnie Spector, with a special guest, guitar and vocal from Grant Geisman, or just guitar?
Just background vocals from Grant and myself, and Matthew Hanford Lee did the lead vocal on that.
So you guys know that Lonnie actually wrote and produced that song, and besides obviously doing the backup vocals. So it's a beautiful song. I assume we can figure out a way we can get it available so you guys could hear it, the full song. Is it available on iTunes? Or?
Not yet. No, I'm finishing up a bunch of songs, and I'll have a whole CD's worth of songs coming real soon. So, yeah.
Okay. So the one we were talking earlier, you kind of got started in the music industry by your love of music and then started photographing some of your people that you idolized, people like Frank Zappa, Bad Company, Van Halen, George Harrison, Santana, David Bowie, just to name a few. I mean, you know, we might have heard a few of those guys.
Yeah, well, it was kind of, I just started photographing people so I could be near the music that I loved, and it gave me access to those artists. You know, it was all kind of by accident that I became a photographer when my high school best friend and skateboard riding buddy invited me to get a camera and hop on a bus and go to Chino Prison to go see B.B. King. So B.B. King was actually the first person I ever photographed. I had to trade my Triumph motorcycle for the day to a guy that had a camera, and I didn't even know how to load the camera. He had to load it for me, and I didn't know what an f-stop was or a shutter speed, but anyhow, you know, that's the story. And from there, I went to the library, checked out a couple of books, and within, I think, 3 months, I was selling pictures to the L.A. Free Press and to other music publications, and eventually Rolling Stone, and, you know, just on and on.
So what was the one artist that you got to photograph that was kind of like kind of your dream come true?
Well, it was even before I had a real camera. I had this little plastic camera like everybody had, you know, and I snuck my way up onto the lighting scaffolding at a concert at Devonshire Downs called Newport 69, and Jimi Hendrix was performing, and actually the guy that was running the spotlight, you know, in the evening he had to go use the bathroom. He couldn't wait anymore, so he just said, "Hey kid, come here, and I'm going to show you how to run the spotlight." So I actually got to run the spotlight at Jimi Hendrix and his performance at Newport 69. So during the day, he came back the next day to jam because he felt he owed the audience an apology because he had a really bad trip on the previous night's performance. So he came out to jam. And during the daylight, I had this little plastic camera, and so I have pictures. You can almost make Jimmy out on the stage, you know.
Nice.
Yeah. And then there was Bob Marley at the Roxy. That was also one of my favorite artists, you know, a little later. That was 1972 or 3. But, you know, getting to hang out with Frank Zappa, also that was really, I love Frank Zappa, so.
Yeah, actually, one of our earlier guests was Del Kasher, who had played with Frank Zappa
at
one point.
Yeah, I know Del. He's a great guy. So. He invented the Wah-Wah, or something to do with the Wah-Wah.
Yeah, exactly.
He brought the prototype, the first one, to the show.
It is.
Just so at the closer to the end of the show, just so you guys know, we are going to be having Lonnie do one of his famous trivias, and hope that either someone on the chat room or on the phone will call in and guess the trivia correctly and get a free admission into the Pedal Expo, which is coming up in April, which we'll be talking about very soon. Now, also, if you check out your bio that you can find a few of them on a website, we have one on our Flow Guitar Enthusiast website. You talk about how you wrote a song for Fast Times at Ridgemont High, but it didn't make it. Can you tell us a story about that?
Well, I was friends with Cameron Crowe when he was just 15 years old. He'd been coming up on weekends to hang out and writing articles. And so myself and a bunch of people, we were all friends of him. We were, freelance writers and photographers, a little gang of Hollywood, troublemakers. And so he would, come up, and he decided to write this, this screenplay book. Actually, it was a book first, then a screenplay, and I had an early copy of a treatment of it. And I suggested to him, hey, it'd be really cool if you had, rock soundtrack for this, this film, if it becomes a film. And he goes, well, what are you talking about? So I said, hey, well, I've already got a song that popped into my head called Fast Food World that I think for that Brad character where he's driving around with that stupid getup, And he goes, well, write the song and then give it to me. So that's what I did. So that was actually the first song written for that film. And they held that song and used it as what I guess now would be considered a temp track while they gathered more songs from other well-known artists. And then a whole year went by, and I'm getting all excited. Hey, this is my big break as a songwriter, And next thing I know, I get a call, from I guess it was Irving Azoff's office. And they said, hey, we're sorry, but we're not going to use your song in the film. So that was my big shot at stardom way back then. So
yeah, and Irving is he's responsible for ridiculous amounts of stuff in the music industry. I think he's probably his most well known for managing the Eagles, right?
Yeah, he was and Dan Fogelberg. Actually hung out with Dan Fogelberg before he had his record out. I still have a test pressing of his first record. And but Irving was a monster kind of guy. He just was an amazing guy. I photographed him as well, and I haven't done anything with that picture because I now hate Irving Azoff.
Well, I am not one to know a ton of music trivia, but I happen to know of him because I believe he's from, I think, Champaign, Illinois, and I helped edit a documentary that he had dealt with about a rock festival in Kickapoo Creek. So
okay.
But anyway, so happen to know of him that way.
So that explains the Dan Fogelberg thing, because he was from Illinois or Michigan or right there.
Yep.
Yeah. A great guy, by the way. I'm sorry he passed way too early, Dan Fogelberg.
Yes. Great guitar player.
Yeah. Gretsch Penguin, as I recall. White Gretsch Penguin.
So one of the other main things that you do is, besides your Pedal Expo and amp shows, which we'll be getting to here soon, you make some lap steels. You have quite a few different models. You have one you call a redneck, where you convert either a Strat or a Tele into a lap, and then you also have got, I'm trying to remember the other
lap
name.
Dancer.
Yeah, the lap dancer. That's the name that I came up with. I figure it sits on your lap. It's a lap dancer. So
does it come with glitter?
it could come with glitter.
It's terrible.
But, when I first put up the website, I used to get all kinds of, hits from people thinking it was some other kind of site. They didn't realize it was actually a musical instrument. And I decided to make the most expensive lap steel in the world. And I used to doodle and draw pictures of guitar bodies and stuff, because I've been playing guitar since I was 8 years old and just love guitars. So, I could never, every time I got ready to I'm going to make this really great regular old guitar, I'd see somebody else's new guitar and I went, oh man, this is way better. I'm just wasting my time. And then I started stumbling upon lap steel guitars, and there was nothing new that looked modern at all. Everything just, even the new stuff looked like the old stuff. And it was really just a bunch of old guys playing them anyway. So I said, well, what the hell? Wait, is this PG rated? I don't know. So I just started, making I'm going to make a 7-string. It's going to be out of, Koa and the best mahogany and Brazilian rosewood this, and I had Seymour Duncan wine as a special pickup for me. And it was. I put it out as the most expensive, you know, at the time lap steel. And, you know, I sold a few of them to people that just have to have the most expensive stuff. And that's all good. And then I came up with this wacky idea to convert a telly into a lap steel by designing a neck that bolts right on your Telecaster, and it basically turns it into a like an electric kind of dobro. It stays wide all the way down to the nut, where it's 3 inches between strings and 3 inches off of a flat fingerboard. So you can just throw out your regular guitar neck, put one of these necks on, and you've got an instant lap steel. And you know what it's going to sound like, because it's on your guitar that you've already put your pickups on that you like the sound of. So, and I've got a, I don't know, they're playing those, I think every continent in the world I've sold one of those, just, you know, over the last 10 years or so.
And that's called the Redneck, right?
Yeah, it's called the Redneck. And also make a glass bar for lap steel guys that, it's solid glass, and then it has like a special edge that when you lay that edge on the strings, it turns into a sitar.
Yeah, as I was reading that, I was going to ask you how that worked. It's just so it's are you so I assume it's the edge is on the bottom of the slide.
Well,
or
you can you can use it like a regular slide, and then when you flip it where the flat edge is ground flat along the length of the bar, when you lay that down on the strings, it basically does the same thing like if you've ever played an electric sitar. It doesn't have like a traditional bridge. It has the strings kind of float over an expanse of flat bridge, and that causes the strings to resonate, you know, with a note that sounds and then, you know, makes that strange sitar sound. That's how sitars work. So I just took that and applied it to these glass bars.
Did you ever make a slide similar like the, I think it's called the Mellow Bar, where you actually could stand up and play it and it would like on your strap? Did you ever?
I had a Mellow Bar, and you know, I bought one just because I was buying every kind of lap steel and steel that you could have. I have a collection of steels that goes back to the 30s, by the way.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so mine wasn't really to, you know, stand up. There are people that play them like that. The telly bodies work best because they have, you know, they don't have a contour that sits against your stomach.
Mm-hmm.
So there are plenty of guys that do them, you know, standing up.
Yeah, I remember, what's his name, Rusty Young from Poco used to use the Mellow Bar.
The Mellow Bar, right, yeah. Right. Yeah, I remember that. And they had even had some that had soft, kind of fuzzy bodies, or that it could look kind of cool, you know.
Yeah.
But the Mellow Bar itself, I mean, originally I think it had like 10 strings and had some strange other apparatus attached to it that I never could figure out. So, you know, like guys would take that off and use them just as plain old lap steels.
Mm-hmm.
And Mellow Bar also made like a regular lap steel that just sat flat on your lap, as I recall. I think it's called the Rustler. I don't actually have one of those, but I sold my Mellow Bar.
Speaking of lap steels, what is your most prized of your collection?
It would be one of the probably first 50 of the Rickenbacker Bakelite lap steels.
The little frying pan type?
No. Like the Bakelite. Bakelite, which is
plastic.
Like a pre-plastic,
yeah.
Black with chrome, you know, plates and a huge horseshoe magnet. And the thing just sounds like nothing else. It's I have a couple of those. And one of them, I need the plates because the plates got, you know, misplaced before I got it. But amazing sounding instruments, you know. I don't know, just a combination of that great big horseshoe magnet. And they changed the size of the magnet after, I think, 1938. Maybe it was after World War II. I'm not sure. They made a smaller magnet, so it mm-hmm. doesn't sound as good.
Yeah, I've played. My friend has one of those, and I've played it. It's a nice sound.
Yeah, it's nothing quite like it, you know. But there's other great lap steels out there. National makes some great ones. And yeah, you know.
Did you like the Fender ones?
I have older Fender console steels, but I don't really like any of their any of the lap steels. I don't really like them. I don't know why. The ones that, you know, console steels predated pedal steels, and that, you know, they have little legs and
yeah, but it's like the double neck with the
yeah.
Four,
I have a double neck and a triple neck. I have yet to score a four neck one. A Fender made like a four neck lap steel, which
that's kind of crazy.
A couple friends of mine have those, and you know, you have to have really long arms to play that far neck, because you know.
Were the pickups similar to the Tele pickup, or were they a different type of sound?
Well, most of the those kind of lamps. They are similar in that they're wound the same way. You know, it's the same design of a pickup. And, well, the earliest Fenders had, well, the earliest Gibson had, like, you know, pre-P90, they had Charlie Christian pickups, and then the P90 replaced that. And the Fender, they had something called the boxcar pickup, so it's a rectangular pickup. Then they made something called the trapezoid-shaped pickup, which that sounded a little better on the bass end. And then they kind of went away from that and went to two Strat-style pickups that you could blend together. And those are called the String Masters, you know, is mm-hmm. the most well-known of those. And the country guys like those. And, yeah, they're amazing sounding. I can't really play them well. I just love anything with strings on it. You know, I even bought a viola, and I don't even know how to tune that. So anything that has strings on it, I'm a big fan of. I'd probably, if I had a bigger house, I'd probably have a huge harp someplace in the corner. And so
harps are cool too. Yes.
Harps are cool.
So the other things that you do right now are you produce these shows called there's an LA Amp Show, a New York Amp Show, based off your hat. Looks like you do one in Austin too.
I did one in Austin. I did.
Okay. And then
I will be doing one in the future in Chicago.
Oh, nice. That's another good city to do one. And then your newest show coming up is called the Pedal Expo Show.
Yeah, it's actually called the Guitar Pedal Expo because actually since the had to do it with the economy kind of, you know, taking a dive a couple years ago, I noticed that a lot of the, even the amp manufacturers needed to, you know, have products based on their brand that they could sell at a reasonable price. So those, you know, that's what happened. You know, a lot of the companies started making pedals. And then also the proliferation of a lot of people just making their own unique looking pedals is just huge. In the last year or two, it has just grown and grown and grown. If you go into most music stores, like the Amp Shop, which is one of my stores in the neighborhood that you guys know, they have, I think, three complete display cases full of nothing but boutique pedals. And also that True Tone Music in Santa Monica.
Yeah, so, another.
Same story. And because, you know, no matter how broke guitar players are, they may not be able to afford a $1,000 amp or a $5,000, you know, handmade Dumble clone guitar. They can still, they got to buy something. And so they're going to go and they're going to buy a little box that looks cool, that kind of sounds like something that they don't have. And, you know, you plug that into the front end of a clean amp and you've got like all kinds of opportunities for different sounds. There's some really wild pedals out there that, you know, really are related to the synth world, you know, with filters and things. And then there's the looping pedals and it's just nuts out there.
Do you think it's a trend, or do you see a trend? Because I see all these distortion pedals. Is it reinventing
you know,
the wheel, or is it?
It's kind of like I would equate it to, like, you know, motorcycles in a way. You know, it's like really popular. Like Harley Davidson was almost out of business, and then, you know, everything happened, and, you know, bikes are big. You know, and it's like it with pedals. You know, people are they love them. They love the way they look. There's a lot of hand-painted pedals out there, and guys will buy them because they look cool, you know. And just like that, the glass bar that I make, they're all hand-blown glass, and every one of them looks different. And some people collect slides, steels, for their steel guitars, and they'll all buy one because, oh, I got to have one because I don't have one. And I think it's kind of like that in the pedal world, too, you know. Let's, you know, to be honest with you, I think just like in guitar amplifiers, there's some circuits that are all pretty much similar. And there's even, I think, a website that was up a few years ago where they would take apart every pedal and post a schematic on there so that guys could make their own version of that pedal, which really pissed off a lot of people. Just like in the amp world, the same thing happens.
Right.
And just like what happens in the guitar world, I mean, how many Les Paul and Tele and Strat shaped guitars do we really, you know, need? And it all winds up in court, you know, at some point. And it's like that with the pedals. Right now it's just all fun and games. What the bummer is, there's, you know, it's just like with amps, there's so many companies. How can anybody, only the smartest guys, the best at marketing with the deepest pockets and the best sales pitch can get them into, you know, the stores where they can actually make a living selling a volume of these pedals. But right now, I figure, well, if ever there's going to be a pedal show, it's going to be now, and I'm going to be the one to do it. Because, you know, no one had ever done an amp show before I did an amp show. So
while we're coming, you know, closer to the end of the show, so let's give everybody a chance to prepare and answer your question. Do you have a good trivia that you can give someone to call up and get free entrance into your Pedal Expo, which is on April 7th?
It's a Sunday, which is unique. You know, it's kind of like the swap meet at the Rose Bowl or something, just on a Sunday, and like a car show, Sunday. And yeah, it's April 7th, one day, 10 until 5. And what's really cool is we're giving away some really amazing stuff. We're giving away a Custom Tones Ethos pedal, which also has a 30-watt amp built into the pedal. So you can just plug it straight into, you know, a speaker. And it weighs like nothing. I mean, they sent me one, you know, in advance because I really wanted to check it out, and it's really pretty cool. And so we're giving that away. I'll have to get another one somehow.
That's like a $600 pedal, isn't it?
Something, yeah, it's a pretty expensive pedal. I'm not sure
it's
exactly.
It's a heck of a giveaway. So if you want to call while Lonnie's thinking of his trivia, the phone number is 323-203-0815. Or you can go on to our live chat, which is on flowguitarenthusiast.com.
And you can answer there. While he's thinking of the question, I just want to give you these dates. Again, April 7th on Sunday in Los Angeles, the Guitar Pedal Expo. Saturday and Sunday, June 1st and 2nd in New York, the New York Amp and Custom Guitar Show. And Saturday and Sunday, October 5th and 6th in Los Angeles, the infamous LA Amp and Custom Guitar Show. So we'll post this on the Facebook page so that we have that. But write that down and make a note of that. Those are cool shows.
All right, what's your trivia?
So, well, you know, obviously, because the prize is a free admission to the pedal show, so it makes sense it would have to be somebody that lives within 100 miles of L.A.
Absolutely.
So just so you know out there, because a lot of people will probably know this, and they'll be going like, ooh, I know that, but what good's it going to do you? So, all right, this is a pretty easy one, I think. Who was the bass player in Blind Faith?
Okay, who was the bass player in Blind Faith? So if you know the answer to the question, you can either get on our chat room or give us a call. While we're waiting for that, I did have a question actually that someone had posted on from my posting on the gear page. They wanted to, so one of the features you're adding to the Pedal Expo is you're having, you know, because they're easy to tote around, you're saying, hey, bring your pedals at the Guitar Pedal Expo. You're bringing your pedals and do some trades and swaps. So this person was wondering, are you planning on doing something like that similar for your New York amp show?
Well, I get asked that, emailed that a lot. Everyone wants to know, am I going to do a pedal expo, you know, in New York? At this point, right now, we are inviting, you know, pedal companies to participate in that show, just as they always have. I'm not planning to have a designated area for that. I do know there's one friend of mine who I met at the AMP show in L.A. who's coming to that show in New York from Japan with a box of, like, the rarest of pedals that he claims to have. So he wanted to know if he could bring them. I said, well, yeah, sure, you can bring those, your buddy and whatnot. But I don't know that we'll have like a huge area. But I'll tell you what, if anybody in the New York area or New Jersey or Philly, whatever, they want to bring a box of up to 12 pedals, they can bring that into the show with their normal paid admission, and we'll make some kind of area for you to swap those pedals with other guys and trade them or whatnot. And but it's not officially called the Pedal, you know, expo at this time, but the LA show is a designated.
And what about an amp? Because I believe this person was asking about doing a swap for amps too.
Well, no, amps creates like a whole logistical problem. You know, I've had people like come to the show, you know, with the dolly with some, but it's not a vintage show. That's the whole deal. All,
yeah.
You know, I don't know. A lot of people are not clear on that, but the amp shows, you know, are all new gear. It's not about vintage gear. But for, you know, the pedals, someone, you know, it's all new stuff from the manufacturers. But if somebody wants to bring some of their older pedals to trade, you know, that's what it's all about, too.
Okay, well, it doesn't look like we have anyone calling in with the answer to that question. The the bass
player. I think
he
stumped him.
Of a Blind Faith. So if anyone calls over the next two shows before April 7th, then we'll if they can answer that question, then we will get them in contact with Lonnie and so that he can get them into the show.
Right. You can also email us, scott@flowguitarenthusiast.com or theflow@flowguitarenthusiast.com, either one of us, and give us your answer. And if you're the first one and we can date the email, we'll we should be able to.
Be fun. There's one more thing I forgot to say. We're actually having two bands perform at this show. One is called Lucid Fly, which is like a progressive rock, kind of like Evanescence singer. And another one is a guy named John Holt, who's a magnificent guitar player from Sweden with his band. They'll both be performing in the late afternoon.
Okay, that sounds good. All right.
Well, we want to definitely thank both of our guests, Lonnie Spector and Josh Childers from Atlas Stands. Appreciate them coming on the show. If you have any comments or questions, visit our website, flowguitarenthusiast.com, or go to our Facebook site, The Flow Guitar Enthusiasts. And for next week's guest, we have Bruce Clement from BC Audio, a fantastic boutique amp maker who has been at the Amp Show quite a few years. So we're looking forward to that. Thanks a lot.
Good night, everybody. See you next week.
Bye.